If Davy Byrne starts running, lads, with the ball, there's absolutely no chance of me catching him. I don't think if I drove a Fiesta after him, I'd catch him.
Football Pod with Paddy and Andy. Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5. Football all the way now. Thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. You can text us 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. We're streaming the conversation as well now. So as well as listening on News Talk, you can watch us on the social channels for Off the Ball, for Periscope on Twitter, at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download it. If you have not done so already, Leeds have beaten Burnley by 4-0 in the Premier League. It's a 5:15 kickoff for Chelsea against Leicester City in the FA Cup final. So we're joined by the Irish Independent football correspondent Dan McDonald, the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Warden. First on the show this afternoon, the former Republic of Ireland international, 118 caps, Manchester United hero and the current Reading first team coach, John O'Shea. John, how are you?
All good, John. Afternoon, everyone. Hope all's okay.
Yeah, great, John. Hope you're good. Seventh in the championship. Bittersweet, I suppose. A good season, though. A progressive season under your coach, Veljko Panovic. He was a coach that was with the under-20s with Serbia. He won a World Cup there a few years ago. It was his first season. How have you got on?
Yeah, look, very good. He's a great guy. He's a great fella to be learning from. And the team that came in with him as well. Obviously, I know Quinton Fortune very well. And Nuno Gomez and Marko Mitrovic, they were the team that came in. So good. They've had a recent experience out in the MLS, and obviously that great experience they had with Serbia on the 20s winning the World Cup. So, yeah, as you said, bittersweet to finish seventh, but frustrating last kind of probably 6 weeks of the season, if you know what I mean, when you're so close. But as we know, the table doesn't lie and you finish where you deserve to be.
Have you found the coaching, John? Has it been exciting? What have been the good points? What have been the challenges for you?
Yeah, look, it's something. It's always exciting. It's a challenge. Obviously, you're getting used to the other side of things when you're used to training every week and performing at the weekend or midweek for the games, etc. But no, look, it's good. Really enjoyable taking things on board, learning from very good people, and hopefully put it into place one day myself and take the reins somewhere along the way.
Have you found it easy to switch from being a teammate to being somebody who has to be a little bit distant from the players?
Yeah, look, I suppose you would. Obviously, some of the lads I played with at Reading for a short spell, they'd probably be able to ask me things a little bit easier, maybe. If you're in the build-up to a big game or stuff like that. So when you're the coach like that, assistant coach, it obviously helps the manager in that sense too. You have that relationship to bounce things off before they maybe need to go in and ask the manager, you know, if they have certain things that they might want to ask. I'd say maybe not today, wait a few days, cool down, or things like that, you know. So it's good in that sense, but it gives you that taste to maybe want to be the head coach, head manager one day.
We've got Dan McDonald from the Irish Independent, John, and Johnny Ward with us as well. Dan, I'm sure you've been chronicling John's career for many years, and now it's a different chapter in that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not. I'll more so throw a question to John, but it's obviously an interesting transition stage that, like, John's generation of players, you see Damien Duff doing his thing, and I suppose Keith Andrews and a lot of the others doing, you know, taking their steps on the road. Like, John, from your perspective, was it always, were you quite happy to go and work somewhere for a while, as you know, to work your way up as such, as you say, rather than maybe taking that leap into a head coach or management straight away? Because I'm sure there might have been opportunities or discussions or stuff that comes up that you could apply for or look into. Like, are you quite happy to take a slightly more patient educational approach to it almost?
Yeah, a lot happier to do it that way. That's the kind of plan. Obviously, currently with doing the pro license as well with the FAI, and on the UEFA course as well, which is kind of giving you management course, but also technical director on sporting side and understanding a little bit of the business side of football, shall we say. So look, I'm very happy with the patient approach, and hopefully it'll pay off in time. But look, you have to take the jump at some stage and get in and learn the ropes too, because you can be as best prepared as possible, but it's things can change very quickly at a club.
It's a hard question to answer. It's not really an either or, but like, for so long of your club career, you're obviously working under one really strong voice, you know, Alex Ferguson, and that's always going to probably come up with you. You know, you'll always be asked about his influence. But I sort of wonder, did you learn as much from the Sunderland experiences as well, and different types of managers, different types of personalities? Maybe some mightn't have been your cup of tea necessarily, you know, along the way. And did you learn as much from maybe more of the lows than maybe as much as the sort of the success of the highs and the Manchester United years?
Yeah, look, definitely. I think that's even the case when you obviously win trophies at United, but the losses we had too, that's when you learn the most, I think, when you have those top four times. But I've kind of described it before as the fantasy and reality. I got the reality, obviously, of the football world up at Sunderland only after a couple of months when Steve Bruce got sacked. So that was the first time that had happened to me in my career. And then, obviously, I think 10 managers followed in the next six seasons. So that experience will be vital, I think. Obviously, learning off one of the best managers of all time and being involved in that environment for so long. For 13 years will be big for me too, you know.
Did you watch the Sunderland Till I Die series on Netflix? Like, did you watch that show?
Look, it's one of those things. I didn't agree with it at the time, but look, that the club wanted to do that, and but you probably, if you've watched it yourself, I didn't feature too much in it, you know. Whether that was their choice or my choice, I'll let you decide.
Yeah, but it must be quite jarring in a way to come from the Manchester United machine to go to something. I mean, it's actually very sad what's happened to Sunderland ultimately, like that the club is in, it's trying to get out in the playoffs now, hopefully, but you know, that the club has fallen to League One. It's pretty hard to get your head around sometimes, I think.
Yeah, it is. And hopefully now that Lee Johnson will be able to regather them again for the playoffs, and they can get back into the Championship. It's an amazing club. And look, we did have some okay times up there as well too, you know, getting to the cup final against the League Cup final against City, and staying in the Premier League for the games or the seasons that we did, you know, because it was always a challenge with the turnover of players and managers. So it's an amazing football club, and I'm glad that came across, I suppose, on the documentary too, that the people behind the scenes in and around the club, there are some great people there, you know. And hopefully for them in particular, I hope it does turn around very quick.
If you want to text a question to John, 53106. Johnny, I was thinking to myself when we're speaking to John here, five Premier League titles, an FA Cup, a couple of League Cups, a Champions League. If we had as many decorated players in the Irish setup as John now, we'd be doing all right.
Yeah, and it's just how humble he is as a person as well, you know, and the fact that, you know, over so many caps for Ireland, these are the players, I guess, that we are kind of trying to look for now, and I'd be interested to hear what John says in terms of what's happened with Ireland. I suppose my question for you, John, I know you like the racing, and if you have a stallion and he goes to stud, there's a lot of hype about him. But if his first season goes badly, basically people write him off. And to kind of transpose that to football, how important is your first managerial job? Because if it doesn't go well, it's almost like, right, where do I go from here? So you kind of have to get it right. You've obviously you're smiling away, so you know what I'm alluding to anyway.
No, look, hopefully there'll be no gelding.
Alan Reynolds can geld you.
it's one of those things. Yeah, look, as I said, you can be as best prepared as you think you are, but look, you have to find, I think, when you look around at certain, you can't always get the perfect match. You want as many things in your favour when you do go into that new job as best you can. The whether it be the age of the squad, the chance to improve the squad, the people that you're going to be working with, the owners, etc., the stakeholders in the club, all them, all those people. If you can get as many of them in your favour, you've got half a chance. And look, it's one of those things. And then sometimes, obviously, a gelding improves a horse too, doesn't it, Johnny? So you might learn from that first experience, and then you go on and do better things.
Well, you say, like, you know, you talk about Fergie or whatever, like, replacing him was probably, on one level, and we kind of might look at Vinnie Perth at Dundalk, on one level, this is an amazing opportunity. But, you know, the upside versus the downside, you could argue that, like, if you take over a job where, you know, maybe competence is on the floor, that means that necessarily expectations are kind of somewhere between on the floor and realistic. So is that what you're kind of, like, is that where you're thinking in terms of your first job? Like, I'm going to start at a level that I think I can kind of improve them.
Yeah, exactly, Johnny. I think that's the nail on the head, really. In terms of, someone said it not so long ago. I remember I've been on one of the courses comparing it to a football pyramid. Mm. If you think of where teams are and where they can get to realistically on that football pyramid, and when you're taking them over, where are they on that pyramid? If you think they're below the level, etc., or if you think they're at the max, you're going to struggle to improve them. So that'll be a deciding factor, maybe, on where you take the job. You know,
somebody.
I don't know if you haven't spoken to Wayne Rooney, have you? Because I mean, he was dropped. Like, talk about the first job scenario that we're talking into there. And I mean, I know you would have been involved in a game, but like watching that Derby last day scenario, and you're sort of looking at him on the sideline and you're thinking, God, like, Wayne, do you even need this? You know, like, I mean, like, you know, he's certainly not doing it for the money. You know what I mean? Like, it's obviously that addiction of football and being involved, but like, there's obviously that side of it where you are exposing yourself to a very different level of stress, maybe even to what you've experienced as a player.
Yeah, totally. But look, I speak to Wayne quite a bit, and I was speaking to him in the week before that game as well, and he was just saying about how calm, because he knew, look, he's been involved in such high pressurized situations, he knew that the players would be tense, and he just wanted to keep them as calm as possible. But he said he was finding it tough, you know, and that's a natural thing, but that's the what he wants to get into, you know. As you said, he would have had other options to take an easier thing, but he's had that appetite for football from playing professionally from such an early age, you know. He's had the appetite, and especially, I think, when he went to America, he kind of made his mind up that he was going to, when he did come back to the UK, he wanted to get into management kind of as quickly as he could. And he managed to keep Derby up. He was hoping it would be obviously a little bit easier than how it turned out, but he got it done in the end.
How have you found observing your other teammate, former teammate, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer this season, John? How do you think he's done?
Yeah, look, I think Ollie's done well. Pure and simple, he's steadied everything. He's lifted the mood around the place. Obviously, the last few weeks have been a bit different with the protests and stuff. But in general, I think Ollie's done a very good job. He's got all the players there. I think he spoke about it a while ago that the players that really want to be at the club, and if he can finish off, yeah, it's not the European trophy that they want to be winning, but if they can win the Europa League, it'll be a good thing because of the semi-finals that they had been losing. So they got across that line now to win the final, and looks like obviously they have second place taken care of too. So, but they have to close the gap, and they don't have to improve the squad. Even when they were on that good run a few weeks ago, nobody was thinking that, oh, Everton's perfect and they're going to be ready to take on City next season. They knew they needed a bit of improvement, and I'm sure they'll be doing that.
You mentioned the protest there, Johnny. John, did you think they went too far? Did you think it was the right thing to do? What is your opinion on it?
Look, John, they've obviously, it's when you go back to when I was obviously playing still there, the green and gold scarves were out for a good while, and then obviously when the team started winning again, it kind of disappeared. But obviously the European Super League brought it all back again. And look, obviously it goes too far when you have policemen getting injured and stuff like that, and breaking into the stadium. And obviously having the game delayed, and it has had an impact on the team. And I think that's what the fans should kind of take into account, because okay, they want to protest against the owners, but let's not affect the team and the players, you know. And they've had to have four games in 8 days, I think it was. So it did affect the team a little bit in the end. But look, they're frustrated and they want answers, and hopefully from some of the statements coming out from the owners, that they'll get some soon, hopefully, and that'll calm everything down.
When it comes to the Glazers, Gary Neville's been very strong against them. Do you think it's time for a change? Would you agree with Gary that it is time for a change at Old Trafford?
Well, look, it's one of those things. Unless Gary knows who's going, the new owners that are going to come in, and I think he's got his hands full with Salford at the minute, so I don't think he'll be coming in on board. But look, it's one of those things that will happen in good time. The Glazers have backed managers, and obviously the fans want more answers. And if they can get that, I'm sure maybe a compromise can be reached going forward and get back to challenging at the top of the Premier League, like they got a bit closer to this year. But City, in fairness to them, had an amazing season and obviously could even finish it off with another trophy in the Champions League as well.
Just in relation to Ferguson and that, and I was always amazed by his ability to kind of, I suppose, evolve despite the fact that he was getting on himself. And you know, you look at Jose Mourinho, and I suppose generally the consensus, John, would be that he hasn't really changed with the times as a manager. And like, if the League of Ireland now, it's more or less half the managers are in their 30s, early to mid 30s, or give or take. Now, like, do you have to evolve, or like, is it no country for old men at this stage? Or, you know, like, when you see the kids of today, even compared to when you started off, are probably a lot different.
Yeah, that's the thing, Johnny, getting used to the. I think Jose mentioned about Lampard when he was 22 or something like that, that he could. He was a real man at that type of thing at 22, you know, and that scenario is obviously a bit different now, but that comes down to the squad and how you adapt to the personalities you have, and knowing how quickly players will respond to certain situations. And it seemed to be the case. Luke Shaw would maybe be a prime example of Jose thought, maybe I know he's a good player, so I'm going to try a certain thing with him, and it backfired a little bit, and then it kept backfiring, and then you see Ole Gunnar come in with a different approach. Whether he did anything magical or just spoke to him nice and calm, and then obviously Luke Shaw responded differently. So that's just one example. It's tough in a squad like that, but you're talking about Mourinho, one of the best managers, most successful managers ever too. So yeah, recently he's found it tough, but he still picked up another fantastic job out in Italy and Roma, and you know, so lots of people still have belief in him.
Did Ferguson know what made you tick as individuals, or was it like a kind of I'm the teacher here, and I run the, you know, I run the class, and you kind of, you know, you bow to me? Because like, I guess Stephen Kenny's success certainly would be, I think a lot of it would be that he understands the individual has different needs. Maybe if you're a quiet lad, you're a brash lad or whatever. Or was he like that?
No, yeah, totally. He knew everybody individually and how to get the best out of everyone individually, and then mastering that collectively. I think that was the key to it. And then obviously, as you said, developing over time, whether that be changing the squad around or changing the staff around, his backroom staff, getting the timing of that done. He was very good at that as well. So all those things in the mix kept producing results for him.
Would you have seen man management qualities in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? Like, it was 2004 FA Cup final, is the FA Cup final today. You're both on the pitch at the end of it, John. You would have known him well. Would you have seen the temperament, the belief? Would you have gone to yourself and said, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he'll be a manager in the future? Or has they actually surprised you, his success in getting that job and now progressing with it?
No, I would have definitely said he would have been a manager, yeah, because of the analysis side and how he approached training and stuff like that. He was very very clever in that sense. And look, his record, obviously, he didn't like it coming off the bench and doing so well. He wanted to be starting, but you could see how that. And look, it was obviously came on a little bit sooner for him too, with the knee injury that he had to stop with. So. Those things combined made him head down that route, but he was always going to be a manager. I always felt that because of how he approached the game.
Was it always a big thing for you, a kid, watching the FA Cup final on TV, John, and then you ended up playing in one?
Yeah, it really was. Really was a big thing. I remember a little cul-de-sac that we lived in Ferrybank. There would have been a few neighbours not too happy with what went on in terms of a bit of damage to gardens and windows and stuff. But it was a big weekend when the FA Cup final was on. Little bit different these times, but it's still a big day. And I think for when you look at Chelsea, obviously they've got the Champions League final to look forward to. But for Leicester, I think it'll be a really Chelsea have had recent success in it too. But for Leicester, I think it's a huge day.
What do you recall about 04 against Millwall, or even the finals that didn't go so well? Anything stand out?
Yeah, look, the finals that didn't go so well stand out because I should have a few more. FA Cup medals in the locker. The one against Arsenal down in Cardiff in particular, that one where I don't know how we didn't score. I think Rude forgot his shooting boots maybe that day, and obviously we lost on penalties against Arsenal. The Chelsea one where maybe if goal line technology were there, I think it was Giggsy maybe had one over the line. Chelsea blocked it out. But against Millwall, it was a big day because it was a lot of pressure on us because obviously Millwall were such underdogs. We felt when we beat Arsenal in the semi-final at Villa Park that was obviously you're not taking things for granted because you know anything can happen in a one-off game. But once we got over Arsenal, we were confident we could do the job against Millwall, and they proved a bit of stubborn resistance on the day, but we did it comfortably in the end.
We obviously have to get to the national question, John. What are we going to do about Ireland, and how encouraged are you by the young players coming up with what you've seen? Because I think people can get, like, maybe they can lose sight of the potential that we have if people are patient and get maybe wrapped up in the results of the last year or so.
No, exactly. That's the key, Johnny, the patience. And I know everyone behind the scenes. Obviously, I'm involved with the 21s with Jim Crawford and Alan Reynolds and Rennie Gilmartin. So, we fleetingly saw some of the boys that have gone up to the senior squad already, and obviously you're aware of some of the younger ones. We just hope that they keep getting enough game time, Johnny. That's the big thing, that they're competing, that they're not just on the bench too much. I know it's tough because the competitiveness of the Premier League and even the Championship, you see the size of some of the squads. So we need to get as many boys playing as many games as possible, and that's what I've always found going through the years with the Irish team. When we do meet up, if you've got boys playing, it makes a difference to when it comes to those competitive games. You know, it just makes a difference of getting over the line and getting those wins on the board.
And do you feel like there is a genuine pyramid system? You spoke about it earlier, the pyramid system from Ireland, from the senior team down to, say, the 15s or whatever, where, like, maybe before Stephen Kenny came in, the under-21s was almost like it was just something that people didn't think of. Nobody really noticed the results. Is there, obviously with Tom Owen and Colin O'Brien and the lads that have all been there, is there a system that we want to play this way and filter it up to the senior team?
Yeah, you'd hope. Yeah, there will be. The Jim and them would be, and Stephen would have regular meetings with the underage, as you said, Tom and Collie, the underage managers, and Andy Reid as well. When Andy was there, he's obviously over in the Bob of Forest now, but they would have had regular meetings, and you're pushing on the best kids as much as you can. You want the kids to play at their own age, maybe as much as possible, but because of the numbers we have to keep pushing up the age groups as quickly as possible to get them in and get them developed that bit quicker.
You got to see much. I mean, think of the Championship season and the young players, and we probably started it, John, looking at Troy Parrott and probably Adam Eda, and yet at the end of it we're talking about Andrew Amoba Bedele, who's been amazing at Norwich, albeit in a very short number of games. But have you had, with your centre halves hat on, have you had a chance to see much of him in terms of analysis and looking at him?
Yeah, look, Andrew had an amazing end to the season, and I saw him play just before he got into Norwich's first team up at Reading's training ground against their under-23s as well. And he stood out in that game too. Great composure, but can just switch the gears effortlessly when he needs to, reading of the game, everything about him. He's a cool customer, and then got the chance to work with him down at Wales when we played Wales on the 21, and he stood out there as well. But look, he'll obviously getting promoted with Norwich will be fantastic for him now. With he'll going into the Premier League, he'll have another test to climb, and whether Norwich decide to, I'm sure they'll want to keep him and let him develop at the club, but maybe he needs to keep playing too, because he's at that level now physically where he can cope. And it'll be interesting to see what develops over the summer, but he's definitely one to look forward to.
We're just running out of time. Just a quick rapid-fire question, John, before I let you go. Just a text in here. Don't forget the Figo nutmeg when it comes to listening to John's accomplishments, says Peter in Roscommon. Who is your most difficult opponent, says one of our texters?
Well, there was a few lads in training for a few years at United now. Would have been very difficult. Ronaldo, Rooney, Tevez, when you're up against them boys, it was obviously a great test. But the rest, you're talking about Henri and Aguero, they would have been two of the ones that would have been very difficult.
Mark in Limerick is asking, what was your best goal scored? Was it Anfield versus Liverpool?
I wouldn't say the best one.
The chip?
The chip. But I like the one in the... there's not that there was too many to remember now, but there was that one in the semi-final of the Champions League as well at Old Trafford. We got the lead in the first leg of the semi-final. It's kind of forgotten now because we battered them in the second leg as well. So, but that was a nice one.
I hear you're going for the vaccine today.
I hope so. Yeah, I'm going out now in the next hour. So fingers crossed, all go to plan.
Get it before you're gelded anyway.
Stallion career awaits. Myself and my wife are happy with 3 kids, Johnny, so we're all good.
Not like Kevin Doyle breeding champion horses as well. He's
this week. Yeah, he's doing well. He'll have a few more nice ones to come. He keeps me updated. So he'll have to increase security, I think, down at that farm in Wakefield.
John, you're a legend for coming on. Thanks so much. And the best luck with Reading going forward.
No worries, guys. Take care.
John O'Shea there, former Republic of Ireland international, Man United hero and first team coach at Reading. We're back with lots more football chat with John and Danny after this.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Andrew, welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with 3 until 5. We're delighted to be joined by John O'Shea there for the last half an hour. If you missed any of that, you can get it back on the podcast or on the OTB Sports app a bit later on. We're joined by the Irish Independent football correspondent Dan McDonnell and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward to talk about the beautiful game. Our coverage thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. You can text us 53106 or tweet us at Off the Ball. As well as listening on News Talk, you can watch us on the social channels for Periscope on Twitter, at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook and on the OTB Sports app. Just to give you a latest score in the match between Southampton and Fulham, we'll get a report because there has been a goal from Richard Newman.
It's Southampton 1, Fulham 0. Shea Adams has given the home side the lead. A free kick from the Southampton right-hand side, whipped in by James Ward-Prowse. Wasn't particularly high. It wasn't dealt with by the Fulham defence. And there was Shea Adams just to hit it home from 5 yards out. Southampton 1, Fulham 0.
Just want to give you some Gaelic game scores as well. Kerry making a blinding start to the Allianz National Football League season. Division 1 South, round 1. Kerry 2-8, Galway 4 points is the latest score from Tralee. It is Mayo 220 down 111 in Castlebar. That match threw in at 2 o'clock. Cork 1 point, Kildare no score, early stages at Semple Stadium. Elsewhere in Division 4 North, it is Louth 2-4, Antrim 1-5. So Mickey Hart against Enda McGinley there. In Hurling, in Division 2A, round 2, Wicklow 5 points, Meath 10 in Ockram. And a result from earlier on in Division 2B, Kildare 429, Donegal 14 points. And the latest score, Mayo 119, Roscommon 19. Some texts on 53106. A top-notch show as always, guys. A few more of you in the studio should be gelded. Great to see one of our own getting on so well. Sounds like a gent, says Sean. And another one, great memories of John's father, Jim, from my spell in college in Waterford IT. Great Waterford and Ferrybank men. A great future ahead for John in coaching and management, says Dennis. Great lads, isn't it, to see John on his road, on his journey, hopefully to the top of football, because he's a really decent fella.
Yeah, I mean, listen, as we said, like he's gone the patient route towards it. And I mean, like when you think about it, there's only a handful of Irish coaches, you know, Irishmen who've sort of worked under Alex Ferguson for so long, you know, I mean, and, you know, obviously Roy Keane did for ages and fell out with him. But like, you know, that he, like, you sort of, you can forget sometimes with John O'Shea, I think, like the amount of sort of seismic moments that he's lived through, you know, dressing room moments and matches of absolute substance and Champions League finals and like a sort of an unbelievable reservoir of experience and anecdotes that he'll be able to draw upon. But obviously he'll know as well that that can only get you so far in your football management career, and time moves on quickly and you have to move with it. So but I've no doubt, like, you know, he'll do well, I think. But it's obviously that first move, and I think, you know, Johnny asked, you know, he asked the right question on that. And there's no move that isn't fraught with risk. You know, there's no safe first job for anyone. Like every, you know, it can look great on paper and then something can happen to change it. So it's always a risk when you step out of the sort of the sidecar and into the driving seat as such. And that's going to be the big test for him, obviously. But like, I think all the range of characters he's probably worked with, and even his coaching career, to work with, say, you know, an overseas coach and sort of different ways of doing things, Chelsea might be different from your typical English, working under an English sort of as an apprentice to an English manager. So it's a good range of experiences, definitely.
I looked at the Drogheda win over Pats last night, and I kind of thought to myself, well, Rovers are going to win this title quite easily in the League of Ireland. Am I too soon to say that, Dan, or what's your take at the moment?
I think Johnny would probably agree with you. And like, it's hard not to form the view that that's what's going to happen. I sort of thought that was a really important game last night because, you know, Pats had their first defeat last week. So you think, okay, can they follow it up by getting back on the horse, winning, getting a run going? But you do have a situation where Shamrock Rovers, if they beat Derry this evening, with Sligo with the forfeit, would be added, like, it'd be a 7-point gap at the top of the table. Because Sligo Rovers will get the 3 points from Waterford forfeit in the fixture, but like 8 points to the Pats. And it's a very early stage. And as people who've sort of been following the league will know, I don't believe Shamrock Rovers have actually really got close to their best level, I think, this season. And yet they are still in that position of control. And you suspect that they will eventually hit a really good run of form. Like they've been okay and then showed an incredible resilience to get loads of late points and sort of, you know, show a sort of character and probably the strength of the squad as well, that they overpower teams maybe eventually in games. But I think in terms of the neutral perspective and wanting a bit of a title race, that result in Drogheda last night would probably be quite disappointing. Albeit, you know, Drogheda are a great story. Tim Clancy and what he's doing with his resources there is like one of the top young managers coming up, and he won't care about that. But in the bigger picture, you know, it's certainly Rovers is to lose without a shadow of a doubt. I know Johnny a couple of years got grief for calling something early doors, but I don't think any such predictions this time will prove to be inaccurate.
You can call it whenever you like. That's my kind of view on all that kind of thing, that predictions business.
Oh, listen. And he does, you know, and Johnny's going out to Tala later to see Shamrock Rovers play Derry, and who knows, like, I mean, it only takes one or two results to change the debate, you know, but it does look ominous. Certainly looks ominous.
It looks ominous when you're seeing Dundalk in a little bit of a pickle at the moment, Dan, which you're writing about again today in the paper.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's you know, I've sort of touched on this during the week, like I sort of find the whole thing pretty dispiriting, to be honest, you know. Like, you know, you all love stories, and there's certainly, like, there's a lot of colour and entertainment, you know, to some of the anecdotes and the slapstick tales of what's going on with Dundalk. But ultimately what you have behind it is, you know, a club that probably had a position of control and dominance, and basically through a sort of a series of bad decisions have taken themselves, to quote that Fergie line, you know, to paraphrase it, like, they've taken themselves off the perch, really. And people obviously from the outside were looking and go, there you go, typical League of Ireland sort of show again. And it's very hard to argue with that, even though this one is so different to a lot of the others, because generally, you know, the club runs out of money and then things go badly wrong. But in this case, they actually haven't run out of money. They still have a lot of money, and they're owners of lots of money. They just don't know what to do with it, and they've made very bad decisions with their money. But as a consequence of that now, you know, a series of bad results have put them into a situation where all of a sudden things could become quite pressurised financially, because they are still carrying a very heavy wage bill. And if they don't qualify for European football, for example, this year, then of course, like, cutbacks and changes are inevitable. And there's talk of a fan protest next week. I'm not sure how serious that is. It's very hard to gauge that sometimes in this online world. But clearly there's deep dissatisfaction with a lot of decisions that have been taken.
Johnny, when you see Richie Towell moving to Rovers, it looks like a done deal for me.
Yeah, because like Dan's piece in the Indo today is well worth reading. If you're not that familiar with the League of Ireland, this is a club that, like when Shamrock Rovers qualified for the Europa League group stages in 2011 or whenever it was, I celebrated like when they got that result in Belgrade. Like, honestly, one of the proudest nights in my sport, and kind of following all different sports, to see a League of Ireland team, you know, qualify for Europa League. And then there were some, you know, supporters of other clubs who said, well, yeah, that's all well and good, but like, how do the other clubs benefit from this? You know, are Shamrock Rovers going to go into a position now where they'll basically be the dominant force? And it didn't happen at all. But that's nothing compared to the Dundalk collapse. The Shamrock Rovers didn't make absolute fortunes from the Europa League that time. Whereas Dundalk have been in the Europa League twice in recent years. That is absolutely staggering. It's so hard for a League of Ireland club to do that. To do it once is one thing. To do it twice is really, really off the charts. And they have their mismanagement of the situation they were in, where Peak Six came in and sort of ran the club in a somewhat, you know, wouldn't have been everyone's cup of tea the way Peak Six ran the club. But you couldn't argue with this. And even last year, obviously, during the pandemic, they were paying full wages. But it's got the situation now where basically you have an old man in America who probably wants to entertain himself in his 70s, whatever year he is. And he's an interest in this club that has not been beneficial at all towards Dundalk. And they've spent a load of money. And if you look at their squad, like, any manager would want that squad in terms of the talent. And they brought in all these obscure signings from all over the world. It's almost like United Nations, but they're actually good players. And you'd say they've signed good players, probably on good money. But they've thrown them into this dressing room that was more or less successful not that long ago. And obviously that's not going to work. There's going to be resentment towards new people coming in who are going to take your position or whatever. And to make a long story short, the reason Shamrock Rovers are almost certainly like galloping their way to the title now is because their main rivals, who should be Dundalk, are not. And Dundalk at the moment won't finish in the top four the way they're playing. So what will happen now is, and I know, you know, you spoke about Drogheda United, Dan referenced Tim Clancy. The rumour will Tim Clancy and Kev Doherty be approached to take the Dundalk job? And if they were, would they work under the chairman? And that's going to be the debate now, because what Tim Clancy and Kev Doherty have done at Drogheda is testament to hard work, young guys in terms of their coaching careers, but work very well together, understand the game, players respect them, working on a budget that would make Dundalk look like North Korea versus, you know, Luxembourg. Like, no comparison whatsoever. And they've done an amazing job such that they're ahead of Dundalk on the table, which is amazing. But now Dundalk are in a situation where, as Dan said in that piece today, and this is the tragedy of it, people who followed that club, who worked for that club, who volunteered for that club, have been alienated by basically an alien regime. And I don't know where that club is going, but the next managerial appointment is going to be very important.
Can you defend the people who run Dundalk, Dan?
Listen, you know, they have put money into the club. You know, there is no doubt, you know, on that. And I think, as Johnny touched on there, like, in the pandemic last year, you know, they did step up, and they almost do things so differently to the League of Ireland norm that, like, at that point, like, they came forward when other clubs maybe were laying off players temporarily or whatever. You know, they said, no, they're going to honour the players. And you know, as I said, the players have been paid well. And as a result, players can't just escape blame for everything that's happened. I think that's something that must be acknowledged, you know. But, like, and the sort of theme of my piece today is, like, you know, it's trying to fix something that didn't, you know, it needed tweaking what was there. Like, you know, the Dock had success. It wasn't perfect, like how the club operated. It just needed to be sort of professionalized in certain areas. I think initially that seemed to be what the intention was, but things have gone in a completely different way. I mean, unfortunately, and it's not about sort of being vindictive or just picking out on someone. Like, it can't be that. But I don't. The plan was never that, you know, the chairman and the main voice would be someone who doesn't actually work for Peak Six. It's just the father of the company's founder, who I think is well intentioned. I don't think there's any sort of desire for things to go the way that they have gone. But clearly, like, you know, working remotely from Florida with no real background in football, and basically, you know, you speak to people, and I've spoken to so many people who've been involved, who really at times just needed to be allowed to get on with it and sort of run things on the ground. But clearly, an extra layer has been added to it, which has been probably inefficient. It's been a bit haphazard, and it hasn't worked. But it is, so really, it is hard to defend it. It is difficult to defend it. But there's like a series of unfortunate events that have sort of led to this scenario, and a lot of good people left who were a big part of the culture that was there, that allowed the club to have the degree of continuity through the successful years. And there was probably, you know, maybe, I don't know, it just seems like they lost focus and maybe thought that they knew better and could do things themselves. But actually, okay, you know, the club was successful for a reason, and it didn't need it. It's like that one in Father Ted where they there's a little nick on the car and they take the hammer to it and like, it just I'll fix it here. And like, next thing you know, like, the whole thing has gone. Like, it didn't need that much of a makeover, but unfortunately it's got it.
I never saw that episode, I have to say. I must check it out.
The reference was, people will get the reference, I hope.
Yeah, I only saw the first season, and it was kind of cool to watch it then, and then it became mainstream and it wasn't
as
cool.
Did you see the over 75s priests all 5-a-side, JD?
No, the one I remember was Brendan Grace was the best one. Brendan Grace didn't give a damn and caused absolute mayhem. Or there was the other
one. Can I just ask you, how did you miss two seasons of Father Ted? Seriously.
Because it was cool to watch it in 1995 or whatever, then everybody started watching it, and I was maybe too cool for school at the time to continue to watch it. But I do remember.
You had 14 months of a lockdown to catch up with it, John, or whatever, 16 months, or however long we're in this.
Well,
surely you have to do this.
World Cup Revisited was very busy. And I can tell you, listeners out there, that Euros Revisited is coming up in the next few weeks around the European Championship with Dan McDonald and Johnny Ward. So that's something to look forward to. But there's all these, like, Netflix, The Last Dance. We got to remove with the times and, like, all these kind of crime thrillers and everything that we'd be watching these days. And Fargo and Chernobyl. Just Ryan Johansson, just this story. About this Seville player has been called up. He's going to be called up potentially for the Republic of Ireland over FIFA relaxing eligibility rules. How good a player is this guy?
Well, listen, I'll be honest. I don't really know. Okay. John is the honest answer. But look, you can only go off the fact that he's been on the books at Bayern Munich, and he's got a 6-year contract from Sevilla, and he was in an Irish camp a couple of years ago. And from speaking to people who, you know, would have been around that camp or watched the games, you know, looked like a decent player, but like, there was a lot of good players in that Ireland squad as well. Didn't necessarily come in and dominate the place, but like, I remember years ago, James McCarthy came into an Ireland squad with a lot of hype. Didn't necessarily overly impress in his first couple of games, but still went on to have the career that a lot of people expected, you know, until obviously recent years he's had his issues. So yeah, listen, you're looking at his pedigree and hoping that he has something to offer. It looks like he might be involved in a 21 squad this month, fitness permitting, or later this month, working with John O'Shea and a few others. And it seems like, you know, it will take time, but he's had a protracted battle to sort of to FIFA relax rules, and that basically allowed him to play for Ireland. It's early days, but you would hope that the fact that those clubs have signed them would suggest that they believe that there's a player there.
Waterford have a new manager as well this week.
Yeah, Mark Bertram. It's always a little bit left field with Waterford. Mark Bertram, I suppose anyone listening to this who's a QPR fan would know Mark Bertram, like, very distinctive blue mohawk when he played, and played with Millwall as well. Canadian international, but from London. Yeah, listen, he's been coaching in America, and He was, you know, at Millwall and QPR as assistant or first team coach or whatever. He was technical director of the Bahamas Football Association. So it's that well-worn path from the Bahamas to Waterford. I mean, we all make that journey eventually.
We do. We got to take a break. Dan McDonnell and Johnny Ward with an Irish football roundup. We got Mark Lawrenson coming up after four, between four and five, about the FA Cup final, about the Premier League win for Manchester City, about Manchester United and Liverpool and their match during the week and the implications. Just to give you some scores as well. In the Football League, Kerry now 210, Galway 6 points in Division 1 South round 1, and Division 2 North round 1 a full time. Mayo 221, Down 111 in Castlebar. So a comprehensive win for Mayo there. It is Cork 4 points, Kildare 2 points in Division 2 South. And we also have matches in Division 4. Louth 2-5, Antrim 1-6. A good start for Mickey Hart so far. And in Hurling, Meath 10 points, Wicklow 5 in Division 2A of the Hurling League. And a full-time from earlier, Kildare 4-29, Donegal 14 points. And Roscommon 1-9, Mayo 1-20. So a comprehensive win for the Mayo Hurlers as well. Half-time in the Premier League, Southampton 1, Fulham 0. And Burnley 0, Leeds United 4 was a result from earlier on. It's a 5:15 kickoff for the Chelsea-Leicester City FA Cup final at Wembley. We'll be looking ahead to that with Mark Lawrenson, Dan McDonnell and Johnny Ward after the news. Stay with us.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Andrew, welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until five. Joined by the former Republic of Ireland international and Liverpool legend Mark Lawrenson in a moment. Football correspondent of the Irish Independent, Dan McDonnell, and the broadcaster and journalist, Johnny Ward, to talk about the beautiful game. Football and Off the Ball, thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. You can text us 53106, tweet us at Off the Ball. As well as listening on News Talk, you can watch us on the social channels for Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, YouTube, Facebook, and on the OTB Sports app for iOS and Android. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download it if you haven't already. I'm more interested almost in Tuchel and Rodgers and the managers and the dynamic and how well they're doing almost, Dan and Johnny, than the FA Cup final itself. It's not what it was. I'll watch the game. I'll be interested in the game itself, but more so in the whole dynamic of today and Tuesday and how they're progressing.
Well, I think that that's part of the problem with today as an event, is that Tuesday has suddenly become so important. More important, basically, which is a shame, you know, and I hate that, like, I understand why it happens, but I hate that, like, every discussion about the FA Cup always goes down the road of, well, what's happened to the FA Cup? Isn't it a shame that the FA Cup final isn't what it used to be? And I think, obviously, in these years where they have the final before the end of the league season, I think that obviously doesn't help. But obviously, no, there's scheduling reasons for that. But just, you know, particularly the case that you have two teams involved who really, Chelsea have a Champions League final, so not necessarily the case, but their seasons to some degree, or the sense of satisfaction at the end of their seasons, may be defined to some degree by have they finished in the top four. And obviously, you know, they both looked reasonably safe on that front until a couple of results, and, you know, with Chelsea obviously losing to Arsenal, and then, you know, Leicester, some points they've dropped recently, like the Newcastle game, and then Liverpool beating Manchester United. Now, of course, Leicester got a free shot, basically, beat Manchester United as well, to be fair. But you know, and Liverpool faced a stronger team. But it has now created this situation where, like, Tuesday is so big. And I understand completely your point, yeah, about the managers, and, you know, there's that intrigue to it. But I think it's Tuesday has actually damaged the standing of today. I think that's obviously been the problem with it.
Yeah, could be a scheduling thing as well as anything else. It is a bigger deal for a club like Leicester, though, isn't it, Johnny, that they've never won the cup. They've been runners-up four times.
Yeah, like, it's, I think, you know, we've kind of had this chat with Damien Delaney about, you know, Manchester United potentially winning trophies. Like, it's sad. I mean, the Champions League, you know, became the big deal. And, like, it's a complete misnomer to call it Champions League when you have teams who won nothing competing in it year in, year out. And it's now more important to finish fourth than it is to win the FA Cup, which when I was a kid would have been unthinkable. And I have brilliant, brilliant memories of the FA Cup and, you know, sadly, I was a Liverpool fan when sort of, I suppose in my early days following Liverpool, Graham Souness took over and they went through this horrendous run in the FA Cup where they were perennially knocked out by these kind of lower division teams. But that was part of, you know, the glamour of it. And, you know, winter football, often going to baddish pitches, you know, raucous home crowds, it meant an awful lot. And that, you know, in those days you won the... you won the league and you went into the European Cup or whatever, you won the, there was the Cup Winners' Cup, the UEFA Cup and so forth. But, you know, it's sadly that where we're at now is that, you know, the Champions League is far more important than the FA Cup. You know, and today's game, I think the one thing that the FA Cup has is a day out for the fans. It'll be a big deal for Leicester. But I do find it sad, you know, the situation where I guess the money and the lure of playing big teams in Europe and group stages and all that stuff, like, it rendered the FA Cup a situation where now, you know, it's like, I suppose the biggest indictment of it is that you'd have clubs who effectively aren't in any threat of getting relegated and probably won't make Europe, resting a load of players for the FA Cup, and that kills me, I have to say. Like, I still think if I were involved in a club, I'd be deferential towards its history, and the fans do still love the FA Cup, but unfortunately it's just faded massively in the last 20 years or so.
53106. When I was a lad, the FA Cup was the biggest day of the year. How times have changed, says Patrick. Was there, Dan, a final that you really enjoyed when you were a young lad?
I was just thinking about it there. I mean, the first one I remember is Wimbledon Liverpool in '88, and the sense of shock around that. But Liverpool Everton was '89. For some reason, it's not as clear. I'm trying to think, like, which is the final that stands out, because There was a couple of Manchester United ones where they hammered Chelsea one year. Was that 94?
It was, yeah.
And then 96, it was a dreadful game, but they beat Liverpool. And then the Paul Rideout Everton one was 95, wasn't it? So, I don't know. I think the 1990 FA Cup in general is the one that's probably embedded in my mind more than any other. Really, when you had the two brilliant semi-finals, which was the Crystal Palace-Liverpool with Alan Pardew scoring the winner, and you had Oldham Manchester United, where didn't Mark Hughes score a brilliant volley? Was that maybe to send it to a replay?
Yeah, that's right. I remember that well, Dan. I was absolutely sick that day. Mark Hughes' late volley was kind of like Oldham. It must have been massive price to get a result, and of course he knew when it was going to replay. That was it, like.
And it was back to back. You know, it was sort of a back to back semi final day, which actually was as big as the final. And I'm not sure, were the semi-finals always that televised event like that, or was that sort of an experiment around that time? Then, so you had the Ian Wright Crystal Palace Manchester United final, which was 3-3, and then the replay a couple of days later where Lee Martin scored the goal, sort of a quiz question almost answer, and that was obviously, you know, for Ferguson 1990. Yeah. So that to me is probably the FA Cup memory that stands out. I mean, I know you have, I don't know, JD, I'd hesitate to guess that you might go with a bit of, but again, it was semi-final Gaza and the free kick.
Oh, that was amazing. Yeah, that was amazing.
But obviously the final, like, it was mixed emotions for him. That was 91, wasn't it? So
91,
they're the years that stick out for me. I don't know about okay, you lads, but they'd be the ones. Yeah,
let's get someone who on the phone who's won it. Mark Lawrenson, good afternoon. It was a really big deal back then, Mark, 1986, when you played Everton. 100,000 people all coming down from Merseyside to Wembley. You'd never won the trophy yourself. And what do you recall?
Wow. I remember someone saying to me, just try and take it all in because it goes ever so quickly. And I think 2 days before, you know, they used to come on at 9 o'clock in the morning, the TV, didn't it, with the build-up to the final?
Yeah.
And 2 days before, I'd played Lineker at snooker for the television. And, I mean, Gary he'd already had 8 century breaks, and I just installed a snooker table at home. I think my best break was 26. So they said, well, just go and play against him, it'll be fine. I said, yeah, of course it'll be fine for him because he'll absolutely smash me. Anyway, I got a frame off him, got beat 2-1. But just the whole thing, it just kind of flashes by your eyes. I remember, obviously, the build-up, etc., the nerves. I'd played at Wembley a few times beforehand, so that wasn't too bad, you know, with a League Cup and obviously playing for Ireland there and stuff. So that was okay. So I knew what the stadium was like. I knew what the roar was when you came out onto the edge of the pitch, when everybody realised the two teams were coming out. And I remember coming in at half time. We were hopeless. We were 1-0 down. Lineker scored, didn't he? And I remember coming in at half time and Ronnie Moran just gave it to us, both barrels. And then for about 15 minutes in the second half, we were just as bad. Bruce and Jim Beglin had a bit of a row, and then we started to play. But in all essence, John, the whole day just really does just disappears in front of you. But of course, you remember we stayed in town, we stayed in London that night, and we obviously were all very much the worse for wear. And that was probably the highlight of the day, in all honesty.
FA Cup memories live here on News Talk and Off the Ball Saturday. Just in terms of today, Chelsea and Leicester, Thomas Tuchel, Brendan Rodgers, they're doing so well. It'll be a fascinating tactical battle.
Yeah. I mean, we sort of know how both teams will play. And I'm wondering if it's a case of who blinks first. I mean, Tuchel said that he got it wrong the other night. He changed too many players, which, you know, managers tend to do nowadays, don't they? It's, Guardiola seems to do it all the time as well. So, yeah, I think the thing is that it's whether Leicester play with two up front or just Vardy, I think might just be the key for me. I'm pretty sure that Chelsea will play with three, which when they're under pressure will go to five at the back almost. But I think that's where the game lies, in all honesty. Leicester are a good side. They can have their odd very sort of bad day, and we know Chelsea extremely organised and stuff. But I think it's really, really close, this, and I think it is going to be fascinating. I just hope it's a decent game. I just hope it's not two teams just kind of sat back and passing it forward and square and across midfield and all those kind of things.
But as Daniel was saying, Dan McDonald here at the start of the 4 o'clock, is Tuesday more important now?
Is Tuesday more important?
Yeah.
For?
Like the both clubs with the Champions League race and everything now than today?
It won't be today when they play. And you won't be thinking of Tuesday. I get what you say, absolutely, totally. But you've got to kind of really put that out of your mind. And you'll know that it's not, because two teams will be the strongest. So, it'll only become important 2 hours after this game kicks off, basically, for both sides. And I think it's just one of those. You just deal with today, and then you have to deal with Tuesday, quite honestly.
Do you kind of pine for the old days, Mark? You know, the thought of, like, everyone going on the batter after the cup final and probably doing it in a place where, you know, you were probably not necessarily afraid to be seen. It was maybe a more kind of, I suppose in those days it was a game that was maybe more rooted in reality than it is now, where obviously you have, you know, billionaire owners coming in, lots of players who are obviously not from England playing or from Ireland, and a situation obviously where it's arguable that the Champions League finishing fourth is more important, or have you kind of moved with the times as it's gotten this way?
Christ, it's a long time since I played. I mean, I finished at 30, so that's over 30 years. Honestly, what you miss being fit. You absolutely, totally take it for granted. And the older you get and the more your joints creak. I mean, Hansen's just had a new knee. and we all look like we're on our way to hospital to have an operation on something, the way we are. I saw Ronnie Whelan the other day. He's losing his barnet. It was absolutely fabulous. And people say to you, you know, all the time, and don't you miss it? Well, I actually don't miss it anymore now. And you can only be a player of your time, which everybody knows. And in many ways, if we could have had the money in that day, but also what we could get away with, it would have been absolutely, totally utopia. it really seriously. I mean, some of the scrapes we used to get in, some of the trips we used to have, all those kind of things were just brilliant. And I think it's, for many players, it's when we get back together again. We don't do it too often, although there's probably 8 or 9 of us who live within a mile of each other in Burtondale, the golf course. But And we don't see each other all the time, but we still see each other. But on the occasions that we're all together, I'm telling you, within 10 seconds, you're back in the dressing room. And the Mickey taking starts and the stories come out and all those kind of things. And you realise that kind of camaraderie, you know, the extreme highs of which we were fortunate to have many, the lows which we had quite a few. Don't forget, we had Heysel and Hillsborough and all those kind of things. And it just makes you really, really strong. And you don't have to see the boys all the time. I remember we had a function about a couple of years ago and Craig Johnson came across from Australia. We hadn't seen Kruggy for ages and ages and ages. Honestly, within 20 seconds, he just said to me, I'd forgotten what the piss-taking was like in that dressing room, but now I remember. I think he's great.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark, could you have had the success without that rapport? You know, like, was...
No. No.
They went in hand, basically.
Oh, absolutely. You could not. And, you know, we had punch-ups in training and lads fell out with each other and all those kind of things. And you know, they get reported now. You think it's, you know, it's on the BBC 6 o'clock news. They've been scrapping in training and all that. It was just normal. And it was, you know, a squad of, what, 20 players, virtually living with each other for, what, 8 or 9 months of the year. You get fed up, you know, as well with one or two people. Not everybody got on fantastically. Listen, the very first day of training for me, we were in Madrid. I'd just signed from Brighton, and we were playing a pre-season friendly against Atletico. And, of course, Liverpool had just beaten 2 months earlier at Real Madrid in the final of the European Cup in Paris. And we had a little light warm-up and everything. It was a really hot summer's day pre-season. And we had started this five-a-side. There was a little bit of a tackle went in between Graham Souness and Alan Kennedy. The next thing is, Graham Souness floored him. He just absolutely hit him. Haymaker. And I thought, wow, what a club this is. And I mean, but it was all over and done with in a minute. And Joe Fagan made him, come on, boys, shake hands. And they got on. But that was, you know, I suppose it was the height of competition. It was absolutely everything about it. But... yeah, it's and all the boys are fab. I mean, they still are. And as I say, when we get together, it's brilliant.
When you see then the Sadio Mane Jurgen Klopp thing during the week where he didn't shake his hand, do you just think that's a storm in a teacup?
Yeah. I remember they gave this is before my time, but the boys told me this story before I went to Liverpool. Phil Thompson was made captain. And they went away and played at Aston Villa, who were a good side at the time. And I'm pretty sure they were 3 or 4 down at half time. And dear old Bob Paisley, who was the manager, actually, when Tomo came in, he said to him, I should never have given you the captaincy. It's obviously too much for you. And Tomo told him to F off. You know, it was like tempers were high. They were playing awful and that kind of thing. But it was forgotten. It was forgotten in no time. You forget it's blokes, isn't it? You know, sometimes you fight, and that's the way the fellas are. And it was just they were full of those stories, absolutely all the time. But it galvanised you, I think, as much as anything. And what for me the best thing was about the football club, inside the football club, was that. If you won 4-0 or occasionally you get beat 4-0, fortunately it wasn't very often, they would treat you the same way. So, you know, and they were really cute in some of the stuff that they did. I remember we were 4-0 down, got beat 4-0 at Coventry. Little Terry Gibson scored 3. And actually I wasn't at fault for any, because Hansen couldn't play against really tiny little players because he had these great big long legs and he used to get them twisted. And we came in at half time at 3-0 down, and Joe was then the manager, and Joe just looked at the two of us, and he just said to me, no, sorry, it was at the end of the game, and he just looked at the two of us, and me and Al knew we were getting it from him, but he was great because he just said to me, right, you two, and of course we're looking at the floor, aren't we, studying our boots and everything, trying to keep out of his way. So he didn't have eye contact. He went, you two, you know who you are. I mean, yes, Joe. He said, promise me something. I went, what's that? Promise me that will never happen again. And we went, no. And he said, right, get changed. Let's all clear off home. And that's how they dealt with stuff like that. Then you beat someone the next week 5. and Ronnie Moran would come in, and there used to be a league in Liverpool, an amateur league called the Zingari League, right, where obviously most of the players were absolutely hopeless, and, but coming in, Ronnie would go, well, he said, I tell you what, he said, a team from the Zingari League would have beaten them, and it was just, that's the way that they were.
We're seeing Thomas Tuchel and Brendan Rodgers getting the best out of their players. Tuchel has been, I think he's been amazing, but absolutely fascinating study the last couple of months.
Yeah, I think he's a bit, he looks like he's a bit of a, sounds like a bit of a A to Z coach, isn't he? And obviously being Germanic, you would expect there's no stone left unturned. You know, what he's done as well, which I think has been good, is he's improving all the German players, which is good because, you know, technically they're very, very good. And he's just looked at Chelsea's players, watched all the videos, and he's made his mind up early which he thinks is his best team, which, of course, was probably Frank Lampard's failing, really. He kept trying to change it, but that's, I think, a little bit of an experience more than anything. And Tuchel's not frightened to give it to them, is it? Did he bring Hudson-Odoi on one game and then
Southampton,
took him
off? Southampton, yeah.
You know, and the problem is now, John, that you can't really slaughter players. I mean, you used to be able to tear them apart, and people had, you know, you had to sort of run with that and get on with it. You can't really do that anymore. And one of the few things you can do, which makes sure everybody knows who's the boss, is do something like that, but explain to the player why you did it. And I think, you know, he kind of ticks all the boxes, etc. Listen, it's great. I mean, he's done a fabulous job. I think the time to really analyse is when he loses a few games. And that's really, I think, when you see the best of a manager, not when he's winning all the time.
Your own kind of managerial days. I didn't actually, just looking up today, Mark, I didn't realise the Dean Saunders link. And we spoke about... We spoke about, like, when I was a kid, obviously, Dean Saunders was a bit of a Liverpool legend, but did you find, we spoke to John O'Shea earlier, so he's at that moment now where he's going to make that next big step.
Sure.
How was it for you, and kind of, I guess, were you happy to kind of leave it all behind?
No, I loved it. I loved it. My only problem was Robert Maxwell.
Yeah.
And Robert Maxwell owned both Derby County and Oxford, and I was managing Oxford, but ostensibly, Kevin, his son, was my chairman. I was 30 and he was 31. But Kevin was great. He just let me sort of get on with it. But his dad absolutely did me in cold blood because he was, as I say, owner of Derby, and he wanted to take Dean Saunders from Oxford, who I was managing, and we were doing okay. Well, we're fifth in what was now the Championship. We had a decent little team. We had a chance, if Dino was going to be fit for all the season, to get like 30 goals, we had a chance of getting promotion. And I used to answer the phone every other day by probably five or six of the top teams in what was Division One, asking about Dean. You know, would we be interested in selling him? And I just kept saying to everybody, no, he's here for a year. He signed a new contract. And if we don't get promotion at the end of the season, then, you know, chuck him with your bids and stuff. Arthur Cox, who eventually took him to Derby, who I'd known since I was a kid at Preston, because he was on the coaching staff there, he would come and watch Saunders all the time. He'd come in my office, and I said to him, Arthur, I don't know why you're here, because he's not going. And Arthur would say, well, you better tell the top man he's not going, which was obviously Maxwell. So we just fell out. I remember we played Blackburn Rovers at home. It was October. I got a phone call about 1:45. Kickoff was 3:00. Kevin Maxwell said to me, look, he said, I'll need to explain this later, but I'm not around today, but Dean Saunders can't play today. And I said, why on earth can't he play? He said, because he's signing for Derby. And I thought, SH1T. Anyway, I thought, you know what, I'm going to play him. Sod it, because I'm going to go anyway, because this is absolutely ridiculous. Played him and he scored. And basically what happened the next day, I was in the Mirror buildings, because Maxwell owned the People, the Sunday Mirror and the Daily Mirror. And he'd come back from Paris. He was in his helicopter, landed obviously on the roof. And I'm sat in there waiting for it to come in. And Robert Maxwell is the kind of person who would, even though he knew you, wouldn't say, hi, how are you doing? He just sort of look at you as though to say, what do you want? I'm a busy man. And he gave me that look, and I just, the whole thing came out. You've pinched my player. You've lied to me. You've promised to do this. And he said, you're going to get £1 million. I said, no, we won't get £1 million. And I said, by the way, we'll get £1 million, and everybody knows you've got £1 million. So when I want to buy someone else, the price is going to go up. It's absolutely ridiculous. And you can stick your job where the sun doesn't shine. And he just looked at me. I thought, hold on a minute. I just looked, and he said, well, he said, I quite admire what you're saying to me. He said, but do you know what? And I said, what's that? He said, I couldn't give an SH1T and just went out the building.
Bully?
Yeah, bully. Oh, yeah, absolute total bully. Absolute total bully. However, what he didn't know, that on occasions when we had no kind of board of directors as such, so I just go to London to see Kevin, and the M40 was just being built. It wasn't quite finished. But if I saw Kevin and it was a good day and they were having a good day, you know, with his dad and business-wise, they'd fly me back in the helicopter to Oxford. It used to take 11 minutes. If I'd gone on the train or on the car, it'd be like 3 or 4 hours. So there was always a bonus, wasn't there?
Okay, we got to take a break. 53106 for your text messages. Plenty coming in on the FA Cup. We're going to look back on Manchester City's title-winning season in terms of them winning the crown this week, and also talk about Man United and Liverpool after this with Mark Lawrence and Dan McDonald and Johnny Ward on OTB Football Saturday here on News Talk.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Andrew, welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5 o'clock. Just going to give you some scores from around the Premier League and the GA leagues. Burnley 0, Leeds 4 from earlier on. A comprehensive win for Leeds at Turf Moor. Southampton 2, Fulham 0 is the latest score from the Premier League. We've got a David Clifford hat-trick to tell you about for Kerry against Galway on day one for them in Division 1 South. Kerry 4-18, Galway 10 points is the latest score from Tralee. Mayo have beaten Down in Division 2 North. Mayo 2-21, Down 1-11 in Castlebar. Latest score 7 points apiece between Cork and Kildare. That is in Division 2 South. Division 4 North, Louth 3-8, Antrim 1-12 is the latest score. And full times in the hurling in Division 2B. Kildare 4-29, Donegal 14 points. Roscommon 1-9, Mayo 1-20. And the latest score, we have Meath leading Wicklow by 18 points to 10 in Division 2A of the hurling. Our coverage, thanks to Paddy Power, our football coverage. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. We're joined by the former Republic of Ireland international and Liverpool legend Mark Larson, the football correspondent of the Irish Independent, Dan McDonald, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward. Mark, just on Manchester City's Premier League win, their title win this week, where does that rank compared to other seasons? How does it compare?
Yeah, I think it's right there. I think that, I think obviously the manager realised the error of his ways, that they never really replaced Vincent Kompany. Diaz has come in and done fantastic. The rebirth of John Stones, as Laporte as well in there. And I think really that's been the key. We know about all the other players around the team. We know how good they are. De Bruyne, for me, is the best player in the world, and has been this season. Without him, obviously, they don't quite have the same gloss, but the movement, the passing, the way that they play, everything about them has been excellent. And I think sometimes with Pep, I think he kind of walks into a room full of journos and thinks he's the brightest man in there, which of course he won't be, but I think he does. And he used to make one or two very strange decisions. We saw Leon in the Champions League last season, obviously, which was a strange thing to do, and occasionally he's completely changed all aside when it doesn't really need changing. But they've absolutely, totally got it right this season, and they're a fabulous watch. The way they play the football is fantastic, and they are so, so difficult to play against because they just dominate the ball all the time, and they've got probably 3, 4, maybe even 5 guys who in a split second can win a game for them.
Does it ring hollow, though, Mark, if they don't win the Champions League final?
No, it doesn't. Because, you know, you can only win so many competitions. Yes, I understand that, you know, it is the holy grail for them. But it's, you know, we were kind of always under that pressure, John, where you had to win something every year. If you won one competition, it was good. If you won two, you know, that was very good. And if you happen to win three, that was brilliant. But our lot didn't sit us down in the boot room for us at the start of the season and say, we need to win this, this and this this season. You just sort of take any competition you can possibly get. So, no, it doesn't. And, of course, this is the first time that they'll have been in it. And I think that's what rings hollow a little bit because, you know, they should have, in a couple of years previous, or last year, they should have been in it last year. And but they're there, so, and they've got every chance of winning it.
We got some good texts in 53106 Super Show today. Mark Lawrence and John O'Shea, brilliant, along with the team from Eddie. Thanks, Eddie. I appreciate the text. A piece of trivia about your FA Cup discussion. Stephen McPhail, the last Irishman to captain a team in an FA Cup final when he captained Cardiff City in 2008. Never mind the Lee Martin scoring, a trivia question. Who was the last Man United goalkeeper in the 3-3 draw with Palace and who replaced him for the replay, says James in Waterford? I think it was Jim Leighton and Les Seedy, wasn't it? Kevin Moran getting sent off in 85. An early football memory for me was a huge deal at the time, says Gavin. And make the Cup relevant. FA Cup winners into Champions League or Europa League. Or bring back the Cup Winners' Cup. I love that final every year, says Des on 53106. Are Liverpool going to do it? Top four now, Mark, based on what you saw the other night?
Well, I would love to say yes, John. I think the problem is, and I think all the teams that play against them, although the fixtures aren't particularly difficult on paper, they know that they can score against Liverpool. That's my only worry. But it just looks at the moment that, yes, and now that Mane's nice and riled up for the next game, we should see an improvement from his performance. But there was, I think the thing with Liverpool, when you look at them, The movement from midfield to forward was very, very good, something which hasn't really been that much this season. And I think eventually Klopp's had to bite the bullet and just basically take Fabinho out of the back four and play him in midfield because it makes such a difference to the front three or four.
It is mad the way it's worked out, JD, that you know, we've sort of debated Liverpool's top four prospects for a while, and recent results looked like, I mean, it looked like they were kind of a little bit screwed and that they'd need a lot of luck on their way. Essentially now it's more or less in their own hands, short of Chelsea winning the Champions League, which might complicate things. That's not obviously likely to happen, but in the sense of the season that they've had from the moment that Van Dijk basically had that injury and the collapse in the second half of the season, finishing fourth with the ability to recharge their batteries, and the way they played the other night, I'd be very confident now they will win their last three games, and that should do it.
Yeah, I think they probably will. I'm a little bit worried because, you know, in previous games, Leeds away, took the lead, got pulled back. Newcastle at home, same kind of thing. So they've actually still got that in them. But listen, if you're the manager, you've got three games to go, boys, and some of you are on your holidays, some of you are in the Euros. But and I think that's the key. And you said before about recharging the batteries. That's the key with Liverpool. And take away all the injuries that they've had, and yes, they've been. And cause massive problems for them defensively. They're not a team that can just have 3 weeks rest because of the way they play, because of the way they do their pre-season, etc. You know, sometimes Klopp does three sessions a day with them pre-season, and they've all looked this year, even, you know, some who play better than others, they've all looked leggy at times. And we know we've got the Euros, but if there's a possibility that the majority of them can get 4, 5 or even 6 weeks off, I think they'll come back a different team next season.
I think we're looking for some kind of, I mean, let's be honest, the relegation thing is done, you know, the Premier League title is done, so we are, like, it does look like at least on the last day of the season the top four is going to deliver us something. You know, we're actually grateful for the focus on the top four because there's so much riding on it, and like, you're wondering where the twist is coming from. You'd expect Liverpool, I know, and everything like Mark says, I mean, you can't argue with it about at times this season, you know, how to give teams a chance, but you would expect West Brom as a game they should win. You would expect Burnley, watching them today, okay, the wounded animal theory, you know, could Burnley sort of bounce back for something that bad? But isn't it funny how it happens that it might well be Roy Hodgson going to Anfield on the last day? It looks like, you know, Crystal Palace, the vibes suggest, you know, obviously could it be his last game there, and it could be Palace going to Anfield. I know Liverpool absolutely ripped them apart earlier in the season, but they obviously have their recent history with Crystal Palace, Liverpool. But it's sort of, you know, if there's ever going to be a twist, you sort of feel like could Roy deliver it in some shape or form?
No,
No. Well, there we go. That's the theory. That was the theory, but it's gone. Yeah.
I love your question. I actually forgot what your first line was. No, listen, because if you'd said, you know, that a poor season by Liverpool's high standards, but your last three games were the three teams who are in opposition in the last three games. You had to win all the games to get in the Champions League. You'd have snapped everyone's hands off, wouldn't you?
I don't think there's any doubt. Klopp, Mark? Like, when this is going to be, if the off season is going to be massive. Like, how is he going to Guardiola changed the way he approached Man City this year, and they finished the season in a massive upward curve. Liverpool went the other way. Klopp has to address. Like, the collapse of Liverpool has been unbelievable. Nobody could have predicted this. As you said, the high-octane way they play comes at a cost. So what does he do to make them challenge next season?
Well, he buys another top-class centre-back if he can get one. So, you know, then he's got at least Gomez, Van Dijk and the new guy coming in, because the problem with Matip, he's made of glass, isn't he? He gets injured so easily. So you solve that problem. So straight away, you're not only really good defensively, but you've got a base from which midfield players who normally protect you as well can actually get forward. I think he probably needs a left back for cover, because Robbo's, well, he's not stopped for as long since he actually got back in the team. He's not really stopped. I would say probably as well a midfield player, almost a bit like a 10. So you'd then have, presuming he kept the normal front three plus Jota, you'd have, you know, five players in and around there. I think he'll let Origi go, Shaqiri go, etc. I don't see too many other changes, but I think it's imperative that they get this rest, because that's the way that Klopp plays, and he is not going to change. And to be honest with you, you know, for 3 years. Take away this season, they've been outstanding. So, you know, why would you really want to change that? And I don't think he will. And I don't think if he wanted to, he'd probably have to change four or five different people. And then you're getting yourself in all sorts of problems if you can't get the people in, but that you want.
Have Liverpool the capacity to get them in? We saw with Alisson and Van Dijk that they were game-changing signings. Have Liverpool? Is there? Because I know you got your ear to the ground there. Is there money to spend?
Yeah, well, what the noise coming out is the budget's not changed. I presume the budget's not changed, you know, because of, in relation to pandemic and all that kind of stuff, but also in relation to the own goal that obviously the owners made in terms of the European Super League rubbish. So, I have a sneaking suspicion, John, that if Klopp goes to FSG. And says, look, I know we've got a budget, but I'd really, really, really like to take this fella. I think he might get it, given the fact that they've realised they've absolutely stuffed themselves trying to get in this European Super League, and they really need to get back on side with the supporters in many ways.
Any big name, potentially?
I don't know. Okay. No, I've not heard names at all, so... I don't know. They keep going on about. Is the centre back? Is he from?
Leipzig, is it?
He seems to get so many mentions that you have to think that maybe that there is something in that. But I tell you where they've been very, very good, unlike a lot of teams, is when they've made big signings, we haven't really heard much about them actually coming to the football club until they're actually there. I mean, if you remember, Jota.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even Alisson. You know, even Alisson, and to a certain extent, Van Dijk as well. So, and I don't, even if they don't get in the Champions League, I don't think it will really affect the type of player that they want to sign, because I think generally now, you know, most of these foreign players, they get Liverpool, they absolutely get what it's all about. And to be fair, we know everybody loves money, and we know it washes around in the Premier League like never before. I don't think money would be an issue as well in attracting these players. In fact, I'm certain it wouldn't be.
Just on Van Dijk, and you had this very serious injury, Mark, with your career. People are just expecting him to slot in like nothing's happened. It was a serious injury. Can he, with the modern science and that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think he's... His injury is 11 months, is what they're saying. I think Klopp said it the other day. Basically, it's 11 months and you know you're absolutely fine, but some heal quicker, some react quicker, but yeah, you hit the nail on the head, John. I mean, the modern science thing is unbelievable, in all honesty, and they just... You know, they just basically plan week, day by day, week by week, month by month. And even if he's recovering really quickly, they don't say, right, well, you can go out running today, you're 2 weeks ahead. They're very, very cautious because they know they've got to get it right. But the serious injuries that we used to have now they're not in relatively, they're nothing like. It's only kind of the ACL. And even the ACL now, how many people have had ACLs and come back and been absolutely fine?
58 games United have played. Is that what you saw against Liverpool? And loads of teams have played loads of games, but they looked a bit fatigued. Would you agree, or did you see something a bit more worrying?
Yeah, it was bad, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think people, and some people have said this as well, until a player goes out of the team, you probably don't realise how much you miss him. So Maguire was a big thing. Him not playing was a big thing, and I think as well with United, I mean they've had a fabulous record in many, many ways in coming back from being a goal down, etc. But I'm still not fully convinced by them. Don't get me wrong, they've had a good season, but if you say to me, like, do you think they'll run Manchester City close next season? I'll tell you now, not with what they've got, and they are so reliable on Fernandes, aren't they? Really, seriously, are. And I'm sorry, Pogba, still not for me. Really, seriously, I mean, how many times has that lad grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck? Not many. Where's his best position? I always feel when they play him, it's kind of, the shape's not quite right. So, you know, I think they're very much, if they think they want to be able to win the Premier League next year, they're probably three or four players away, including a central defender, because Lindelof is definitely not the same without Maguire. And also, by the way, I ain't convinced by the goalkeeper.
Which one?
Henderson. I think he's done okay. He's done okay, but I'm not convinced by the goalkeeper as yet. I mean, he'll probably prove me wrong, and I hope that he does, but I'm not sure.
Dan, you want to come in there?
No, nothing to come in. I mean, I actually, it is striking when you hear sort of Laura go through the options there, that it sort of feels like they have a lot of issues to go through. You know, like, if we're talking about who's going to challenge Manchester City next year, which is the broader debate, like, you do find yourself coming back to Chelsea first and foremost, I think, because it feels like personnel-wise, you don't have that long list of you know, those little issues, those little points, and you kind of wonder, have Manchester United got second because they've just been stable enough throughout the season? They've been reasonably consistent throughout the season. There hasn't been any mad drama per se, whereas obviously Liverpool have had the highs and lows, and Chelsea have had a managerial change and stuff. And if you were to run it again tomorrow with a 38 sort of game season with the same teams, would they finish second? I wouldn't be so sure. I don't know what Mark thinks on that.
Well, I'll tell you what, John, as well, is how well's Cavani done? You know, I think he's been fabulous for them. Without him, there'd be quite a few points less. I wasn't quite sure when he came, because you never know at that age how his fitness is. But boy, what a player he is. And if they've had him for most of the season, they would have got a lot closer to Manchester City, most definitely. But, you know, can they keep him for a year? I mean, going forward, they haven't got many issues, and, you know, your Greenwoods and your Rashfords are only going to get better. But they do need some players. But then I think in relation to Manchester City, Chelsea need players if they think they're going to win in the league. Liverpool definitely need players as well, because Manchester City are just such a good side, and I'm told there's some kids coming through in the next kind of 12 to 18 months, a bit like, you know, Foden-esque in different positions, so that'll be interesting.
We got team news from the Chelsea-Leicester City FA Cup final. This is a 5:15 kickoff, and it's George Alderman.
Chelsea welcome back N'Golo Kante from injury in their starting lineup alongside Jorginho, who keeps his place in midfield ahead of the returning Mateo Kovacic, despite his howler against Arsenal in midweek. Kovacic is on the bench, but there's no place for England striker Tammy Abraham, sparking further questions about his future. Regular cupkeeper Kepa is in goal, with Ziyech, Werner and Mount the front three. There's a huge boost for Leicester, with key defender Johnny Evans passing a late fitness test to start. James Maddison has to settle for a place among the subs, while Jamie Vardy and the in-form Kelechi Iheanacho lead the line again. It's Chelsea-Leicester City in the FA Cup final here at Wembley.
Full strength sides, Mark Larson, who's going to win it?
Chelsea.
Michal and Kerry's been in touch on 53106. What does Klopp do with Kabak, Williams and Phillips when Van Dijk, Gomez and Matip come back in?
Don't worry about it. Just keep all of them. Kabak, obviously, I think he will eventually become a good defender. The boy Davies, who I knew from Preston, I didn't think he'd play a game at all, because it was just basically there in case they were down to the very, very last kind of dreg, not being disrespectful to him at all. He'll keep them, because I said before, I mean, you know, Matt, you can't rely on Matip to play that many games. So hopefully, you know, say the new guy comes in, and you'll still need four central defenders, and then it's up to Klopp to pick whichever ones he wants.
Eddie Howe for Celtic, it looks like it's going to happen. Do you think he'll be a good fit up there, Mark?
Yeah, I do. But why is it taking such a long time? I don't really get that. I get the fact that maybe he didn't want to take the job at the time, because it was like Rangers, you know, 10 years and all that kind of stuff. I sort of get that. And like, you know, well, keep him out so he's not part of this season at all. But the chief exec's changed as well, hasn't it? Or he's due to change.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, so just interesting times. And look, you know, when you talk to people in the game and everything, and you know, we talk about managers and how important they are, and we know about that. Do you know the second most important person in a football club for me? Forget about the players for a minute. Is your head of recruitment? Absolutely, totally. Just look at Barcelona and look at Madrid in terms of that statement. Look at Celtic. You know, if you get that wrong, it can take you 18 months, 2 years to actually turn it around and get it back. I just think that it's so massive at any football club, and it can make such a difference. Look how well Bielsa's done at Leeds. And, you know, we know the way that they play, and it's really, really difficult to play against them. But look at the key players in his team as well. They've done fabulous with the recruitment. They really seriously have.
Okay, Mark Larson, Dan McDonald, Johnny Ward, fantastic chat. Thanks so much. Have a great evening and enjoy the rest of the weekend.
You too, JD.
Okay, well, that's OTB Football Saturday for this week. Burnley nil, Leeds 4 and Southampton 3, Fulham 1, full times from the Premier League, at Chelsea and Leicester kicking off in about 15 minutes' time in the FA Cup final. Just to let you know, so GA scores, Kerry have thumped Galway 421 to 11 points in Division 1 south of the Allianz Football League. Mayo beating down by 221 to 111. Mickey Hart's Louth losing by a point. Antrim 115, Louth 3-8 in Division 4. And it's 111 for Kildare. Cork 9 points at the moment at Semple Stadium. Just to let you know about tomorrow's show, the Sunday Paper Review, or Concert Digital Social Channels from 11:30. Rory O'Connor and Shane Keegan picking out the best stories with Joe Malloy. Then on News Talk 1-7, two live and exclusive Premier League commentary games to bring you. Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr describing the action between Spurs and Wolves from 2:05. Then Nathan Murphy and Vinnie Perth calling the shots for West Brom and Liverpool from 4:30. A huge match for Liverpool. Be sure to tune in with Joe for what's going to be a great show. If you missed our Saturday panel review of the week with Bernard Jackman, Cliona Foley and Brendan O'Brien, or any of OTB Football Saturday with John O'Shea, Mark Lawrence and Dan McDonald and Johnny Ward, you'll be able to find the podcasts of our content on the OTB Sports app. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download the app. Thanks for listening so much today. Speak soon. Bye-bye.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.